Chapter 3. Shit. 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 Harry doesn't know how long it's been since he stormed out. He stops banging his head against the wall and takes a deep breath, trying to calm himself down like Luna taught him. Deep breath in. Hold for a count of 3. Breathe out. And again. It helps. His heartbeat slowing until it's no longer trying to gallop out of his chest. It's dark in the shed. He didn't turn on the light, just banged into the room, threw up walls so Draco couldn't follow and, there's no other word for it, had a little meltdown. He hadn't meant to do that. Not the kissing. Not the biting, certainly, but especially not the kissing. Draco had looked so lovely, an agitated flush across his cheeks, his hair wild and tangled around his sharp face like he had pulled at it. Harry could never resist him when he's like this. Yelling or fighting or kissing, it all comes from the same place. Draco is under his skin, a splinter so deep in his flesh it is part of him now. Harry didn't mean to kiss Draco, but Draco had kissed him back. He'd kiss Harry like it was something he'd wanted too. He needs to talk to Draco. He needs to know. They can't go on like this. Opening the shed door is like being thrown into a maelstrom. His glasses are instantly fogged over and the snow and wind whip at him. The trees at the edge of the clearing are creaking and swaying like menacing towering giants. Thick snow-filled clouds hide the stars, but Harry can feel the moon. One more night and it will be full. It's calling to him. Not now. He can't give in to the pull now. The cabin is quiet when he enters, the fire crackling merrily in the hearth. Harry walks into the bedroom. It's a mess, like a whirlwind has come through. There are clothes everywhere. Draco's bag is on the bed, stuff half full of Draco's possessions. He's packing. Draco is leaving. Harry reaches for a jumper, the light blue one with the V-neck Draco likes to wear around his flat, but never out in public. It's a little too big on Draco and too long in the arms. Draco likes to bury his hands in the sleeves like mittens. Harry picks it up and brings it up to his face. It smells like Draco's cologne. Draco can't leave. Not like this. They need to talk. Harry needs to explain, apologize, beg if he has to. He puts the jumper back into the dresser where it belongs. The bathroom door is closed. Harry knocks. Draco, we need to talk. No answer. Can we talk? Silence is the only response. I'm coming in, okay? He opens the door. It's not locked. The bathroom is empty. Harry's heart stutters in his chest. Where is he? He looks around the cabin wildly, his eyes snagging on the hooks on the wall by the entry door. Draco's cloak and scarf are gone. His boots are missing too. Harry swears. That stupid idiot. Harry rushes out the door. The storm is like a howling beast pushing and pulling at him. He can't see what's 10 feet in front of him. Everything is a white, swirling veil lashing at his face in the dark. He concentrates, letting his eyes bleed into amber. His vision is better in the dark, but even the wolf cannot penetrate the thick snowfall all around. There are no footsteps. Everything is covered in a layer of fresh snow. There's no other way. He has to use the wolf's superior senses. Harry hasn't done this often. It feels a little too much like an animal taking over, but he has to find Draco by any means necessary. He closes his eyes. Deep breath in. Hold for a count of 3. Breathe out. And lets the moon's pull rise in his chest. Wave after wave coming and claiming more and more of his human self. Harry invites it in and doesn't fight the change this time. There's no pain, no alien presence taken over. It's like gently submerging himself into a calm sea. He takes a deep breath, down into his stomach, and lets the tide wash over him. He opens his eyes. The world looks different like this, the night less dark but strangely washed out, like faded muggle photographs, greens and reds gone from the world. All he can see are shades of yellow and blue and grey. But the night is alight with sounds and smells. He looks down at himself, his long legs covered in dark brown fur. He flexes his front paws, standing in the puddle of his torn clothes. His shoes and wand and glasses next to him in the snow. Ah, he always forgets that part. Harry carries his things into the cabin in his teeth and drags the door closed after himself. He finds Draco's faint scent in the air, breathes it in deep, and lopes off into the night. His paws fly over the fresh snow, wind tangling in his fur. His ears are pricked forward, focused on catching a trace of movement, a twig breaking, heavy boots on ice. He runs along the trail leading into town, past the fallen tree where Draco pushed him to a snowdrift 2 weeks ago while cackling madly, past little yellow signs with an owl symbol along the path indicating this as being a nature reserve. Harry can still understand the signs, but the wolf doesn't care. The wolf's a single-minded creature. All that matters is finding Draco. He runs until he comes to a bend in the road. Harry's about to take the trail leading left into town when Draco's scent is lost suddenly. Nose in the air, he tries to confirm Draco's path and picks up his scent again. He noses at the ground. Where did Draco go? There's footsteps from Draco's boots. But that's wrong. They're leading deep into the forest, to the right, away from people. Draco must have got turned around in the storm. Harry runs. He has Draco's scent again. He doesn't need his eyes. The trail leads him deep into the forest. Where is Draco going? Is he lost? Harry needs to find him. Is the only thing that's important. Find Draco. He pauses. The scent is stronger here. He follows the scent trail, nose to the ground. There, a few feet in front of him, Draco's wand, half buried in snow. Harry picks it up with his teeth. Draco is without his wand. This is bad. The underbrush further along the snowdrift is disturbed, as if something or someone went through it. There's a messy groove in the snow, as if a body rolled down the snowy bank. Harry follows the scent away from the path, down into fresh snow that buries him up to the chest. He pants around the wand between his teeth. He recognizes the place. This is near the stream where he sat all summer. He can smell the ice covering the water. If Draco fell into the stream. Movement in his peripheral vision makes his ears prick. His eyes pierce the night. A dark shape sits slumped against the tree. Draco. Harry's wolf heart leaps in his chest. Draco is as pale as the snow covering him. Not his usual pinkish shade of pale. There's a bluish pallor to him like he's a ghost. His lips are bleached of all colour. Draco is staring straight at him, his pale eyes wide and glassy. Woof, Draco says, his voice nothing but a faint whisper of breath, blinking up at Harry looming over him. Harry whines and noses at Draco's face. He's so cold. He licks across Draco's cheek, trying to bring warmth back to his skin. Harry, Draco smiles, closes his eyes and slumps sideways into the snow. No. Harry throws his head back and howls. A long, mournful note. Draco can't go. Harry won't allow it. Harry clenches his teeth into the hood of Draco's cloak. He digs his legs into the ground for leverage and pulls and pulls and pulls. Draco needs shelter. He has no fur to keep him warm. Harry drags Draco's limp body through the snow. Where can they go? If they're near the stream, the abandoned mine shaft must be close by. Just a few more pulls. He can do it. The snow is deep and Draco is heavy and Harry strains every muscle, calling on all the strength in his body. He can't stop. If he stops, Draco will die. Harry won't allow it. The wind howls and Harry pulls and pulls. Step by step he finally reaches the overgrown mining shaft. He rips apart the perfunctory barricade, barring entry with his teeth, and drags Draco the last few meters inside. Harry goes back for Draco's wand. He drops so he could use his teeth to haul Draco to safety. Inside the mine shaft, it's dry and protected from the elements, but it's still bitterly cold, and Draco is so very pale and shivering violently. Harry shakes off the wolf. He needs his hands. The shock of cold is instant without his fur. He always forgets he's naked when he turns back. It's disorientating to readjust to human body and human senses. The world looks different as a wolf. It always takes a moment to find his way back to himself. Draco's clothes are sodden from the snow and ice, clammy and cold. Harry strips Draco out of his clothes and uses Draco's wand to transfigure Draco's clothes and boots into a thick fur blanket and padding for the rough ground. He needs to warm Draco up. Harry crawls under the blankets with him, using his body heat to warm him, shivering as Draco's cold skin leeches away his warmth. He mutters a quick warming chant to aid him, and they lie cocooned in the blankets while the storm rages on outside. Draco is warm, so warm. He's drifting in and out of consciousness. All around him is softness and warmth. It feels so good, so safe. Nothing can hurt him. There are strong arms around him. He knows these arms. He sighs happily and bows closer into the secure embrace of Harry's arms. There are hands in his chair. He knows these hands. Draco loves these hands. This is a good dream. Are you awake? Harry's voice is so dear in his ear, and he's so comfortable. You're so stupid. What were you thinking? Harry asks. You could have died. You found me, Draco murmurs, shifting a little to push himself more firmly into Dream Harry's warm embrace. What if I didn't? Dream Harry asks stupid questions. Knew you would. Must save everyone. Couldn't even let me burn. You would have saved me too. Dream Harry doesn't know him very well, it seems. Go back into Fiendfire, Draco murmurs, drowsy from being held so securely. I would never. Dream Harry's arms tighten around him. This feels so nice. You're here now. Harry's breath stirs the fine hair in the back of Draco's neck. Draco shivers and the arms tighten around him some more. Dream Harry gives good hugs. Draco sighs happily. You disappeared just as I had you trained up properly. He yawns. Couldn't have that. You like me well trained.
This is such a good dream. But Harry would never say something like that. In that tone of voice. Not to Draco.
Do you? Harry's lips trace along Draco's neck. Harry's beard raises goosebumps on his skin. I'm tired. Draco whispers. Okay. A whisper, equally low. The last thing Draco registers is a soft press of lips against his shoulder. When he wakes again, it's light out and Harry is breathing softly in his ear. He's lying under piles of blankets and he feels sweaty and overheated. Harry's body generating so much heat. He's like an oven. Draco's skin feels slick with sweat, sticking to Harry's chest. Wait. Merlin. Draco remembers with a jolt. The storm, his fall, freezing cold, the wolf, Harry. The dream that wasn't a dream, maybe. He's naked in a cave, and so is Harry. Back among the living? Harry asks. Harry's hand is spread out against Draco's chest, broad palm resting against his sternum. Merlin. He's naked, and so is Harry. I don't know. Draco says. Harry's voice is close, his lips brushing Draco's neck as he speaks. You almost died out there. You found me, Draco says, awed. The black wolf, that was Harry. I'll always find you. Draco's breath stutters out of him. Harry. He tucks Harry's arm tighter around himself, fingers closing around Harry's wrist. Don't take this the wrong way, Draco whispers. Heart beating wildly in his chest. But you're impossible. What's the wrong way? Harry asks, voice muffled in Draco's hair. As a compliment, obviously. Draco laughs, an incredulous sound. At this situation, this moment of lying in Harry's arms in a cave, of hearing these words out of Harry's mouth. He must be dreaming. He shakes his head. You're hard-headed like a mule, a righteous prick half the time. Rash and impatient, and you never fucking listen, and... Anne? Harry whispers, pressing his face into the crook of Draco's neck, his beard scratchy against his skin. Draco's hand clenches on Harry's arm, a tremor going through his body. He can feel the corresponding response shuddering through Harry. They are so tightly wrapped together. Draco can't take it any more. He turns in Harry's arms, wriggling around until he's facing Harry. Harry's glasses are gone, and his eyes are impossibly green and unguarded. Draco has never noticed how long his eyelashes are. Harry's cheek is burning when Draco touches his face. Draco brushes his thumb along Harry's high cheekbones and cradles his dearly beloved face in the palm of his hand. Harry tilts his head into the caress, his eyes falling closed. Draco's thumb brushes gently, so gently over Harry's lips. Harry's mouth falls open on a soft exhale. "Don't run," Draco whispers, and kisses him like he's wanted to for so long. Harry's lips open and Draco sinks into him. Soft, wet sounds, the shocking heat of Harry's mouth and the slick slide of his tongue. Draco gives himself over, pours himself into the kiss. Harry's hands are on Draco's hair, cradling his head in his palms, tilting Draco's face so he can deepen the kiss. Harry rolls on top of him, or Draco pulls him. Either way, there's so much warm skin. Harry's hands pulling at his hair, stroking along his shoulders, his back, his hips. Draco can't keep track of Harry's touch. His hands seem to be everywhere, gentle and firm, grasping and stroking. Draco wants it all. Harry's hands on his body, his voice growly with need like the wolf inside, saying Draco's name over and over again. The taste of Harry's lips, the salt on his skin, the burning rasp of his beard against the nipple, nosing into his armpit and down his ribs past the spot that tickles and makes him squirm. Harry's teeth nipping at the sharp ridge of a hip bone. Harry's nose pressed against his cock where it lays rigid and leaking on his stomach. Harry breathing human warm breath into the damp curls of his groin. Harry's touch feels like a fever, and Draco is so hard it aches. He wants to be in Harry's mouth so badly he's prepared to beg for it. Wants to come, needs to come. He's overcome with the need to know how Harry sounds when he comes. He wants it. Wants Harry. All of him. Harry's mouth slides along his cock, a slick drag of lips like he's learning the shape of him. Draco arches into the touch. Harry's fingers grip the base of Draco's cock, and his lip closes around the head in an open mouth, sucking kiss. Draco's breath escapes him in a long exhale. Harry sinks his mouth down over him, tongue cushioning the slide of Draco's cock. Everything is wet and hot and glorious. And Draco never wants it to end. Harry sucks him tight and sloppy wet, one hand squeezing his ball so lovingly with a knuckle pressed behind them that Draco's legs shake from the rising pressure. The sounds they are making are obscene in their cavernous blanket fort, harsh breath and spit and keening gasps. Draco is burning up with the pleasure of it all. He didn't know it'd be like this, having Harry finally touching him. He's going out of his mind with desire, with the mindless joy of it. Harry takes him in so deep. His back comes up in an arch until his spine feels like it's about to crack. Every muscle in his body coiled tight, straining towards his cock in Harry's wicked, sweet mouth. "Merlin," Draco gasps. "Harry, I can't," and comes. Shuddering apart in Harry's mouth, incoherent pleas and praise dripping from his lips like honey. "Harry," he pants. "That was..." Merlin. He can't think. Everything feels fuzzy. He gropes blindly for Harry. "Come here. I can... I want..." Harry nuzzles his face into Draco's chest. Mouths at a nipple. "I'm fine," he rasps, voice gone. Sweet Merlin and Morgana both. Sucking him made Harry come. This is too much. Harry hums against Draco's chest. It reverberates through Draco's skin and down into his bones. Draco's whole body hums with the melody of Harry's choosing. Harry nuzzles his way down Draco's body along the trail of hair under his navel where it grows darker. He puts his nose there in the dark blonde curls at the base of Draco's cock and just breathes. Draco falls asleep like that, with Harry's head resting on his belly, his hands lazily stroking his still trembling thighs. Draco wakes again to the feel of kitten licks against the glands of his cock, darting soft touches of a slick tongue. Draco flails a hand out, grabs at Harry's hair and pulls. "Merlin Potter," he pleads. "Have mercy." Harry bends his head more firmly into the grasp of Draco's fist in his hair, licks his lips and grins. A little bashful, a lot smug. Ugh, you're impossible, Draco groans. He pulls Harry up by the ears and kisses him. Harry comes willingly, draping himself over Draco, his soft cock nestled into the tender crease of Draco's groin, snug against Draco's cock. They fall asleep again, tangled up in each other under the thick blankets. It feels like hours before they rouse themselves enough to leave the cave, blankets transfigured into passable winter clothes for both of them. Draco's giggling to himself helplessly as they walk, muttering about, "If father knew," and "Mother would never." Harry doesn't ask. He hides his grin in his coat and keeps walking. The forest lies still and white before them. The storm covered everything in a thick layer of powdered snow. There are no footsteps anywhere, as if they are the only people in the world. There are leaves stuck in Draco's hair at the back. The contours a little fuzzy without his glasses. Harry doesn't say a word, and utterly charmed by the sight. Harry can't stop touching Draco. His fingers flex with the urge to take his hand and keep him warm with his own body heat. He wants to kiss him all the time now that he's had a taste. Smell his own scent on Draco's skin. The splinter feeling from before is nothing compared to this. Harry's blood sings of the secret, sacred knowledge of the taste and feel and scent of Draco's pleasure. Two perfectly dovetail joints coming together. The wolf is preening in his chest. When they get back to the cabin, the sitting room is cold and dark. Harry finds his glasses in the pile of abandoned clothes by the door, then steers Draco into the shower, stripping off his clothes and herding him into the shower stall that's barely large enough for one. Harry positions Draco under the hot spray and plasters himself to Draco's back, nose against the back of his neck and arms around him, water cascading over them both. Draco is quiet, unusually pliant under Harry's hands. Harry lathers Draco's hair with his expensive hair potions, fingers gently massaging the scalp and untangling the strands of hair. He wraps Draco in the biggest, fluffiest towel he owns and tucks him into bed, Draco's half-packed bag shoved aside and out of view. Harry stokes the fire in the hearth to a roaring flame, brings Draco tea and sandwiches and slices of apple, and wonders if Draco might need something else. The urge to provide for and take care of Draco is beating a strong, insistent rhythm in his chest. Draco grabs his arm and Harry gets up to clear away the dishes. "Stay," he says, looking up at him, face open and lovely, clear-eyed and honest. "Of course," Harry says, kisses Draco, briefly, sweetly, and crawls into bed with him, curls himself around Draco. Harry ends up half on top of him. Draco securely underneath him so he stays right where he is, in Harry's cabin, in Harry's bed, naked and flushed pink and his. They only leave the warm cocoon of the bed to get something to eat or use the loo. They doze, and when they wake, they reach for each other, insatiable with the need to touch. The full moon rises fat and bright over the treetops, and Harry lets it pull him under. Draco wakes to a tongue rasping against his neck. He groans and shoves at Harry's face. His furry face and muzzle, and sweet muggle baby Jesus, it's the wolf. There's a wolf in Draco's bed. Draco is naked. He is naked in bed with a large wolf. There are probably laws against that sort of thing. Ordinarily, he would ask Hermione about it, but he'd rather fellate a dementor than broach that topic of conversation. He rolls over in bed, the wolf scrambling away from his flailing limbs and perching himself at the edge of the bed. "Hello," Draco says. The wolf whines, his ears pinned back flat against his head. He looks contrite, shy almost. Can wolves be shy? "Can you understand me?" Draco asks. The wolf glowers. There's no other word for it. Draco would recognize Harry's unimpressed eyebrows anywhere. "Don't be like that. It was just a question." Draco pats the bed beside him. "Come here." The wolf sits back on his haunches, head tilted. "All right, fine." Draco rolls onto his back with a sigh, speaking to the ceiling. "Here I thought I could get some wolf cuddles, but if you don't want to..." The bed dips instantly as the wolf flops down half on top of him, and huffs woofy morning breath in Draco's face. There you are. Draco laughs and buries his hand in the thick ruff of the wolf's neck. Harry's wolf is magnificent, with his long legs and fur almost jet black, little flecks of a lighter warm brown around the face, and even lighter towards the muzzle. His eyes are amber, the colour of wild honey, shining with their own light. But they look smaller. There's human intelligence inside. The wolf is obviously still Harry. And it turns out that wolf cuddles are the best. Draco brings Harry tea. Chamomile with too much honey so Harry would deign to drink it. Rattling around with cups and saucers in the kitchen to give Harry privacy to change back before Draco returns to the bedroom. They eat the last slices of Stollen, sitting up in bed and getting crumbs everywhere. They curl up together under the afghan. Draco strokes Harry's hair, rubs the soothing salve into the claw marks along the meat of Harry's shoulders from where the werewolf ripped into him, and reads to Harry from his ridiculous romance novels, where he recovers from the full moon with his head on Draco's chest. Harry sleeps. When Harry wakes, he reaches for Draco again, and they make out languorously, with slow kisses and soft touches, until urgency takes over, and Harry puts Draco on his belly and makes him come all over the sheets. "Can I cast the diagnostic charms on you?" Draco asks later, after they made it out of bed and cast a few scourgifies at the sheets, sitting cross-legged in front of the fireplace in the sitting room. "I'll show you the readings. I'll show you everything. I'll explain, I promise." Harry looks down at his hands as he speaks. "It's okay. I understand. You had to make sure it wasn't dangerous or whatever." "What? No!" Draco reaches for Harry's hand, squeezing his fingers. "Harry, no. It's not like that at all. You're not dangerous. It's for you. To make sure you're all right, that you're safe." Harry's fingers squeeze back. "You're calling me Harry?" His voice is so low, Draco has to strain to hear. "Oh, I guess I am." Draco can feel his cheeks flushing. "I like it." "Good. That's good." He bites his lips. "So, I'll just..." Draco casts the diagnostic charms. He brings out his notebook and all the research he had hidden in his bag. He spreads it all out on the ground. The maps tracking the movements of known members of the family. The potions. The research done with Hermione. All the information gleaned from the journal of Nicholas Stokes, the man who bit Harry and leader of the family. He shows Harry everything. All the things they knew already when Harry left, and all the things they figured out after. Harry is very quiet during Draco's explanation. "How many?" he asks when Draco is finished. Of course that is what Harry will focus on. How very typical. Goddamn stupid saviour complex of his. 8 more after you left. 2 died. Harry nods, swallows. "Okay. I think I need to be alone. For a bit. Okay. I'll be here," Draco says. "He'll always be here, for as long as Harry allows." Harry looks at him, just looks at him for long enough that Draco wants to avert his gaze. His stomach swoops when Harry smiles, heartbreakingly sweet, and places a soft kiss on his lips. Sometime later, Harry comes back sweaty and windswept and crowds Draco against the kitchen counter, where lasagna he's just taken out of the oven is cooling, and filling the small space with the rich scent of tomatoes and herbs and cheese. Draco yelps when cold hands worm their way under Draco's jumper, and a chilly nose touches the back of his neck.
"That looks good," Harry murmurs.
"See, I do know how to cook some things." Harry makes a non-committal sound, fingertips of one hand creeping under the waistband of Draco's trousers, playing with the soft hair trailing down Draco's stomach. Draco slaps Harry's hand away. "Hey, behave!" Harry grumbles, teasing at Draco's neck with his teeth instead. Draco shivers. "You're all sweaty. Go shower so we can eat."
"Fine," Harry says with a put-upon sigh,
and disappears into the bathroom. The lasagna is very good, if Draco says so himself, and there are even leftovers for the next day. In the evening, Draco reads on the sofa,
one hand holding the book and the other in Harry's hair. Harry sits on the ground with his back against the sofa, sanding down little moon discs and howling wolf figurines. Draco hides his smile on the pages of the book and manfully says nothing. "Will you show me again what you did with your eyes?" Draco asks when they lie in bed at night, curled close under the covers. Draco watches as Harry lets his eyes change. It's like a slow melting of one colour into another, emerald green being overtaken by yellow, blending into burnt orange. Under Draco's rapt gaze, Harry changes his left hand, the one with Umbridge's scar. Harry's short, blunt nails grow longer, and his knuckles thicken slightly with the change. The hair dusting the back of his hand grows coarser as his nails elongate further and further into wickedly curved claws. The transformation changes the scar too, the thin writing fading almost completely into Harry's skin, as if the wolf has taken Kitch with him. Drake explores the length of Harry's transformed pointer finger with his own finger, tracing down to the tip of the claw. Harry's finger twitches. "Sensitive," Harry says. Harry teasingly runs the claw down the bridge of Draco's nose, over Draco's lips, the pad pressing down gently on his bottom lip. Draco closes his teeth around the tip and grins. The grin melts from his face as Harry's eyes flash amber, just a flick of changing colour and then gone. Draco holds Harry's gaze as he closes his lips around the finger, the tip of Harry's claw, a sharp pinprick on his tongue. Harry's mouth falls open, and Draco's stomach is in freefall. Draco opens his teeth slightly so Harry can push further inside his mouth. Draco's slick tongue cushioning the glide. Draco can almost feel the tiny indentations of the whorls of Harry's finger as Harry strokes Draco's tongue. Harry's eyes never leave Draco's as he removes the finger slowly and pushes back in with his thumb, right up to the knuckle. Draco opens instantly, letting Harry press down on his tongue, saliva gathering in his mouth in a gush. Everything is wet and slick, and he thinks he's drooling a little, but he doesn't care. He can't take his eyes off Harry, the rapt look on his face. Draco closes his lips around Harry's thumb and laps at the digit, a smooth, wet slide. The other fingers of Harry's hand are cupped underneath Draco's chin, cradling him in his palm. Harry's claws are so close to his carotid artery. One wrong move, and Harry could end Draco's life. It is intoxicating. The rush of heat this causes, warming Draco's blood and making his cock stiffen. Since when does he get off on danger? "Draco," Harry says on a shaky exhale, and he sounds drugged, voice so low and broken. Harry moves his thumb almost all the way out, and Draco wants to whine like a dog. But then Harry pushes back in, and it's wet and messy, and Draco is definitely dripping spit down his chin. Harry swears, and suddenly his thumb is gone and Draco does whine, but Harry is back with his mouth, pushing his tongue inside and bearing Draco down into the pillows. He's all wet heat and sloppy sucking kisses, and hands holding Draco's head in place, his thick thighs bracketing Draco's hips, cooling all over him. "Oh, God, Draco, and can I, and let me." Draco is lost, letting Harry bend him and move him, clutching at Harry's broad back, nails digging in. "Fuck me," he gasps. "Harry, I need..." Draco's head falls back as Harry's hand pushes between his legs, his fingers wet and warm against his hole, pressing inside him so easily, his body giving so sweetly to Harry's touch. "Yes," he hisses. "Come on." Harry rolls Draco onto his belly, and Draco moves with him, pliant and eager and so fucking hard already, grinding his cock into the mattress. He needs Harry inside him. Harry's calloused hands part his cheeks, and Draco moans and counts up his hips, presenting himself in a silent demand for more. "Come on." Harry's fingers slide back inside him, fucking him open, and then Harry's mouth joins his fingers. The tip of Harry's tongue, a tease against his rim. He's dripping with Harry's saliva. It's trickling down his balls as Harry fucks his own spit into Draco's hole. Sweat is springing up along Draco's temples, under his arms. He must look a right state, messy and sloppy and begging for more. And the sounds Harry's making, slick, sucking wet sounds, growling under his breath and whispering filthy promises into Draco's skin.
It's the hottest fucking thing Draco's ever known. Harry, please. Draco moans, twisting in the sheets and out of his mind with pleasure, already from only Harry's fingers and tongue. Harry hooks a hand under Draco's thigh and pushes up his knee to his chest. Puts Draco's own hand there to hold himself open for Harry's cock. Harry mutters something, and suddenly Draco's hole is dripping with slick. And Harry's broad hands grip his hips, and Harry's cock pushes inside him. A long, smooth slide. Harry's head dips between Draco's shoulder blades with a drawn-out guttural. Oh, God. Draco agrees. Harry is thick and hot and perfect inside him, filling him up so sweetly. Fuck me, he moans, legs sliding up higher, opening himself up more. Please. And Harry does. Harry fucks him slow and deep and out of his mind. He fucks Draco right to the brink of orgasm and holds him there, a sweaty, breathless, shaking mess of sprawling limbs and tangled hair. It goes on forever like that. Just when Draco is painfully close, Harry pulls back, swearing and panting and dripping sweat down Draco's back. Harry slows all the way down and holds them both there on the knife's edge. Harry has the self-control of a saint or a devil. Draco can't find the distinction right now. Harry fucks him to the brink again, his thrust going erratic and staccato with a dirty, messy grind. And Draco pushes cock into Harry's fist and keens. Almost there. Then there's more. He's impossibly fuller. A pressure against his already stretched rim. Harry's fucking stutters and stills, and he's panting into the back of Draco's neck. One arm wrapped around Draco's chest. Harry's whole body pressed all along Draco's. Harry's cock swells and swells. Impossible pressure. And Harry grinds into him with an agonized sounding groan and comes, squeezing the head of Draco's cock in his fist, and Draco's gone, shuddering apart and coming in messy, gasping spurts all over him, Harry's fingers. Draco's floating in a sea of endorphins, hazy with pleasure. He comes too with Harry still knotted inside him, because that's what it is. It's real. Sweet muggle baby Jesus. Not so real. Harry's arms are both wrapped tightly around Draco. They're stuck together with sweat and spit and cum. And Harry makes these small movements, flexing his hips as if he can't help himself. Draco's whole body feels oversensitized. Harry keeps biting gently at Draco's jaw along his neck, sucking bruises all along the slope of his shoulder. Draco makes a high, breathy sound, and Harry finds his mouth, kissing him sweetly, whispering, "Shh," and "I got you." Draco falls asleep wrapped up in Harry's arms, listening to the low murmur of Harry's dear voice in his ear. Draco wakes when Harry's cock slips out some time later. Draco winces, sore from the exquisite torture of being locked together so intimately. Harry cleans him up while Draco lays in the middle of the bed like a very floppy starfish. Grumbling that he has to do all the work, Harry sits between Draco's legs and thoroughly checks for damage while Draco squirms. Harry's fingers are terrible tease. "Don't make me hard again," Draco protests. "I'm checking you for injury, you madman." Draco's hole feels puffy and swollen and well-fucked. He must look a right mess. Draco squirms some more. "Hold still," Harry says, palms spread in the small of his back and pressing down firmly. Draco stills. "Not helping," he presses out through clenched teeth. "Oh, you like that? When I..." Draco can hear Harry swallow hard, the tosser, as if he doesn't know what he's doing to Draco. As if Draco didn't roll over and let Harry put his knot in him. "Hold you down, like that?" Draco rolls over onto his back to better glare at Harry. "Merlin, yes, I like it, all right." Harry ducks his head so his hair's hiding his eyes. But Draco sees the treacherous little uptick at the corner of his lips. Harry moves over Draco, biceps flexing as he holds himself up, caging him in. Draco's legs fall open instinctively, the traitors, so Harry can slide in between them and plaster himself all over Draco, his whole weight pressing Draco into the mattress. "Don't look so smug. It's unbecoming," Draco grouses. Harry's little display isn't helping his cock staying down. Stupid Harry with his stupid biceps and stupidly broad chest and thick thighs. Draco hates him. Harry laughs,
dragging his nose along Draco's cheek. It tickles, says the pot to the kettle. I'm not smug. I'm entitled.
Hey!
Draco pinches Harry's flank in retaliation. A posh little girl. Draco pinches Harry's ass, then lets his hand stay there. It's a very nice ass. A plump, firm handful from all that running. You can be a little smug, Harry allows. That thing you did, with your mouth. Harry noses into Draco's hair at the temple. That was nice. Draco smiles a little satisfied smile. Like that, did you? Harry ducks his head again, eyes fixed on Draco's lips. Yes. You like my mouth? Draco lips his lips, watching Harry follow the movement. Ha! Harry's breath grows shallow. Draco is sure he can feel Harry's heartbeat drum in his own chest. Yes. Kiss me, Draco says, and Harry does, eagerly. Harry wakes up warm and snug as a bug, wrapped up in Draco's long limbs, his cheek resting on the tattooed snake underneath Draco's collarbone. Draco smells like sleep and comfort, the perpetual scent of berries and pervs tickling Harry's nose. But there's also something else, more primal, that makes the wolf preen in Harry's chest. He can smell his own cum, rubbed deep into Draco's skin and still leaking out of him during the night. Harry can smell the combined desire on Draco's skin. He fights the urge to slide down the bed and put his mouth between Draco's legs, to part his cheeks and follow the trail of scents to his lovely pink hole and wink Draco with his tongue, making him slip sweetly into orgasm. Harry doesn't remember ever being like this. This ravenous, with hunger for another person, drawn helplessly to the sound of their voice and the smell of their skin. He's like a compass needle always pointing towards Draco. He and Ginny used to be all over each other back in school, stealing into clothes at empty classrooms for heated kisses and furtive, nervous making out. And later, they had sex all the time in that breathless rush of, "We survived!" in the months after the war. But their connection didn't last. Shadows creeping back in when they lay sweaty and sated in the sheets, when the silence between them grew heavy and then drew them apart. Ginny found purpose in Quidditch and Neville later on, and Harry joined the aura training. This thing with Draco, Harry doesn't know how it started or when. It's like he looked up one day and something had shifted, showing him Draco in a new light, as if he'd worn the wrong pair of glasses all this time, but suddenly his vision had cleared. Years of bitter enmity, blood and broken bones, then grudging respect and eventual friendship. And now, here he is laying in Draco's arms. And it's so easy, as if it was inevitable from the start. Harry turns his head to press a kiss at the top of the ink head. A little good morning to Draco's snake in the grass. Draco snuffles in his sleep, mumbling something that sounds suspiciously like pancakes with purple wings. Harry snorts into Draco's shoulder. He disentangles himself from Draco's limbs, wraps Draco's ridiculous silk dressing gown around himself, and pads into the kitchen to obey Draco's subconscious for pancakes for breakfast. He feels less sluggish and achy than all the full moons he's spent in his cabin alone. Normally, he'd be taking it slow, joints creaking and brain a little foggy, but he feels energized. The wolf feels easy and content instead of the constant restlessness that had plagued him before, settled. As if spending the full moon curled up as a wolf with Draco had eased something inside him. Is this how he could have felt all the months before? Harry takes himself for a run, easing into sprints, muscles working smoothly. No phantom pain makes his shoulders twinge where the claws digged him deep. He breathes in the clear forest air, mind going still and quiescent. Draco is waiting for him, bundled up in a thick jumper and his scarf and the afghan wrapped around him, sitting on the porch with a cup of tea when Harry comes back to the clearing of trees. Harry presses a messy kiss on his lips that makes Draco complain about sweaty mountain men, but Draco tips his face up for another kiss anyway. The wolf curls up in Harry's chest and goes to sleep, content and happy. Instead of the shed, Harry practices Luna's werewolf yoga routine in the cabin now under Draco's watchful gaze. Sometimes, Draco joins him, bending and stretching and biting his lips until Harry gets distracted and there's no calm to be had anymore. Luna would understand. One evening, with the fire burning low,
Draco starts shivering, so Harry goes to grab Molly's knitted Weasley jumper. It's thick and fluffy and very cosy. Draco's lips curl in disgust, and something curdles in Harry's gut so instantly it hurts, heavy and sour with disappointment. It's so unexpected, this whiplash, that Harry doesn't know what to do if Draco says one wrong word now.
I don't think so, Draco sneers, with that old familiar drawl. I'd rather freeze to death than wear orange.
The word orange oozing forth like a foul taste in his mouth.
What? Harry says. The colour?
He starts laughing, doubling over with big, gasping belly laughs. He forgot. For a moment there, he forgot that this isn't Malfoy, the sneering, nasty little toad of the Hogwarts years. This is Draco, his partner for the last 3 years, his friend. Someone Harry relies on, someone he trusts, someone he... Draco stares at him.
There is something seriously wrong with you.
I know, Harry gasps, and collapses into laughter again. The next morning, Parzival returns from England. The little owl hops onto Harry's shoulder and nuzzles his beak into Harry's hair with a thrilling hoot. Draco looks very put out by his lack of greeting. One of Hermione's letters addressed to Draco, but Draco hands it to Harry and goes to put the kettle on.
Draco, Rosie got her first tooth. I saw your Aunt Andromeda yesterday and little Teddy Lupin. Tell Harry that Teddy asked after him. Tell Harry we love him and miss him very much. Thank you for the readings. I talked with our contacts at Mungo's and she agreed. The diagnostics all look good. I knew it. Harry is doing so well. How's the full moon? Did he need the potion? Is he all right? Tell me everything. I wish he'd come home. I know we can't push, but I wish he could meet Rosie. She'd love Uncle Harry.
This is Ron. May, come home. This is stupid. You know this is stupid. We have a new line of peeking pasties, your love. It makes you spew sparkles. It's brilliant. I was certain you want to try out on the pasty kit, but border control, you know. Come home.
There's a photo there, too. Ron and Hermione, and little Rosie grinning gummily at the camera. A tiny white nub of tooth visible. Harry hands the letter to Draco while he stares at the photo. Rose looks like a person. No longer a wrinkly bundle in Hermione's arms, but a real person. And Harry missed it. Harry missed it because he couldn't deal with himself. What he had become. He's such a hypocrite. Railing at Remus running and leaving a pregnant Ponks behind. And now look at him. Remus was the bravest, strongest person Harry had ever met. And he never told him before it was too late. And Harry had so much more than Remus at this point. Things had been good in Harry's life. He'd had his family. Ron and Hermione were safe and happy, and they were about to have little Rosie. He had his job, and his weird old house, and his weird old creature, and things were good. But all that didn't matter because he couldn't face the reality of his transformation. What a hero he was. Brave Gryffindor hero. What a joke. Draco is talking. I'm sure McGonagall would be ecstatic to have you at Hogwarts. You could teach defence if you wanted to be boring and predictable. Maybe a flying instructor? You were an all-right seeker, I suppose. I heard Madame Hooch is going to retire. Harry doesn't really listen. His head is spinning with possibilities. A teacher. He'd been a good teacher for the DA, he likes to think. And he's always enjoyed stepping in to help train junior aurors. You don't have to have it all figured out, you know, Draco says, and Harry nods. Yes, he could be a teacher, maybe. The following days keep melting into one another. Harry goes running again every morning, mindful of ideas and maybes and possibilities. He's thinking of the future. The first time in so many months, it feels like there will be a future for him that is more than a cabin in the forest, existing and running and transforming alone. Draco is quiet, watching him with his colourless grey eyes. Waiting, Harry knows. He appreciates the inhuman effort it must cost him to be patient with Harry while he works his shit out. Harry whittles away at Rosie's moon mobile with Draco's toes under his thigh and Molly's afghan over them both. He runs and he makes tea for Draco and feeds him dinner and thinks of the future. Draco lays propped up on Harry's chest, hair tucked behind his ears.
fingertips drawing idle circles through the hair on Harry's chest with his long, elegant fingers. Sweat is cooling on their skin, bodies warm and languorous from orgasm.
Really? That's all? Draco asked. Ginevra, and two hookups years ago, and me?
Said like that, it makes him sound a little sad and inexperienced. Ron and Hermione have only ever been with each other, but they are different. They found each other early. Harry hadn't known what he wanted after Ginny, and his attempts with blokes weren't very successful. And then he did know, and couldn't have it. And he didn't feel like having substitutes in the hopes of it being enough. Or maybe he could have had it, but didn't know. So he's an idiot, is what it comes down to.
What about Pierre? What's his name?
The French ministry liaison. Draco asks.
Who?
You mean Patrice? I never slept with him. It'd been after the first time Harry had dreamed about kissing Draco in the green study in Grimmauld Place. When Harry had avoided him and gone out with a man a couple of times to distract himself. Nothing ever happened. Patrice had been blonde and tall and wiry like Draco. But he wasn't Draco. Draco tucks his head in close, his hair tickling Harry's nose.
Oh, poor you. Celebrity is so very wasted on you.
Harry bristles at Draco's mocking tone. He knows he's not as experienced as Draco, but he's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, well, I don't like sleeping with people I'm not in love with, he snaps.
Draco's breath stutters out in a sharp exhale, and he goes still.
Shit. Shit. Shit.
You... Harry closes his eyes. He hadn't meant to say that, but well, it is true. Here goes nothing. He's supposed to be brave, isn't he?
Yes, he says.
Oh. There's an indeterminable pause in which Harry doesn't dare breathe.
Same. Just, you know, in case you were wondering.
Harry's heart is beating double time. He feels a little dizzy.
Good. Thanks, he tries. God, this is awkward.
Should he take Draco's hand or something?
There comes a muffled sound from Draco's direction, and when Harry looks up, Draco's shoulders are shaking.
Is the Pratt laughing?
Thanks.
Draco makes an undignified snorting noise and then looks outraged at the sound.
You're a marvel, truly.
Harry makes a face.
More mockery. Great.
Oh, don't sulk, Draco says. Come here.
Draco smiles and hugs him close, kissing Harry's burning cheeks and his lips and his chin and the tip of his nose until Harry is mollified. They sit in front of the fireplace. Draco teaches Harry how to plait his hair. Harry's fingers are clumsy, and he pulls on Draco's hair. But Draco doesn't care because Harry kisses his shoulder for every wince. When Harry abandons his task, and his hands begin to wander under Draco's jumper, and his lips find Draco's neck until he's about to go mad from the teasing, Draco pushes Harry down onto the rug and climbs on top of him, and kisses and kisses and kisses him. Draco comes riding Harry's hairy thigh, two fingers inside, grinding sweet torture against his prostate. Draco didn't know he could want like this, overflowing with desire for this man, spilling his feelings every which way. It's too much, this thing in his chest, seeking the beating of another's heart, delighting in every touch. Loving Harry, it's too much. Draco's not strong enough, not brave enough. But oh, he wants to be. Hermione told him the whole sordid tale of the war one night. Bleary-eyed with exhaustion from the searching the family day and night after Harry left, apparating back and forth to consult experts and old manuscripts in the library of Alexandria in Egypt. Papyri were so ancient and fragile, a mistakenly cast a seer could turn them to dust. Only goblin magic was permitted in the sacred halls. Ron fretting over Hermione running herself ragged with the baby on its way. She told him about Dumbledore and Horcruxes and Professor Snape, and of Draco's own place in Dumbledore's plans. Dumbledore never liked the old headmaster, but he could respect him. Plans within plans, you don't reveal your trump card until the very moment it is needed. But Dumbledore had underestimated Harry.
Even he did not understand how singular a man he is. Harry would have done it no matter what, even knowing death was waiting for him at the end of his path. Harry had known, Draco was sure of it, deep down, that he lived on borrowed time his mother had bought with her life. And when that magic was spent, so was his life. Draco loves the boy from before, when Draco still hated him and didn't know him, and he loves the man here with him now, the Harry he does know. He loves Harry. He loves the stubborn tilt of his head, the way he hides his smile like a shy beam of early morning sun peeking over the horizon. His wild hair and scratchy cheeks and broad palms, his giant stupid heart, his determination and inability to dress in anything but joggers and oversized jumpers. Harry puts too much sugar in his tea and has terrible taste in books, and Draco loves him. They walk into town so Harry can buy paint for the mobile he is building for Rose. Draco tells him of spells he can use to varnish the wood, but Harry wants to do it the Muggle way, with his hands. When Draco suggests they go get supplies from the supermarket, Harry hesitates. "We don't need much," he says. "Let's wait, maybe." Draco nods and doesn't say anything, but on the inside he wants to leap with joy. Is Harry coming home? Could it be? Harry hasn't replied to the letter yet. Harry keeps it folded in the pages of the novel on the nightstand. That means something, doesn't it? Harry asks about Rose, and Draco is stumped. She's a baby. What's there to tell? She's small and wriggly and cries a lot. He tells Harry so, and Harry nods as if this is vital information. In the evening, Draco is on the sofa with a book, talking to Harry through the door to the bedroom. Suddenly a large black wolf jumps up on the sofa, looming over him. Draco shrieks, book flying in the air. "Potter!" he squawks. "Don't use the wolf to give me a heart attack." The wolf snorts inelegantly, tongue lolling like a dolt. Did Draco mention that Harry has a terrible sense of humour? Pansy was right all along. Draco has horrid taste in men. The wolf plops down on top of Draco, wolfy grin still in place. Draco rubs the wolf's ears. "Look at you, you hairy beast. So fluffy." The wolf bites Draco's nose in retaliation. Later, when they're in bed, legs tangled together, Draco can't stop dragging his toes along Harry's calves, delighting in the sensuous pleasure of Harry's body hair, so different from the meagre blonde fluff on his own limbs. They're talking about the family under the cover of darkness, Harry asking Holton questions. Maybe the night makes it easier for Harry to ask what he needs to know. "We tracked them all down," Draco says. "The others. But not before they bit more people. Children, mostly. Sick, all of them. We found Stokes's journal after you left. After we tracked them all down. 'It's a gift,' he wrote." Harry stiffens. "The bite is a gift," he murmurs, voice sounding far away. "Is what he said. The bite is a gift. Before he bit me." "Of course, it's all over the journal. A gift. Healing. Change. The greater good. Fucker probably thought he was doing you a favour." Harry hums. "Tell me about the children." Draco tightens his grip on Harry before he says, voice low, "Not all of the children survived." Harry nods. "How?" "Some think about how he had changed himself. Hermione thinks he made a mistake. The man who bit you, he was an adult when he altered his body chemistry. And at first he bit other adults. The children were too young, too sick. Their bodies couldn't handle the transformation." Harry sits up, wrapping his arms around his knees. "I shouldn't have left. I should have brought him down myself. I should have helped." Draco takes a breath, steadying his voice and calling on his resolve. This is it. The trump card only played at the right moment, Hermione had said, eyes big and mournful, but voice like a steel trap. "It's the one thing that might work to bring Harry back." "You still could. The children..." Harry makes a low sound, curling in on himself.
He was never good at handling children getting hurt. As an aura, his big stupid heart too soft to bear it. Draco steels himself to get through this, knowing this is hurting Harry. Big stupid hero with a guilt complex a mile wide. Their world has really done a number on him. And to think Draco believed him to be nothing but an attention-seeking wanker once. He'd been such a fool. They could use your help, Draco says. You've learned to control it. You could teach them how. Luna would help, and Bill Weasley. And I could pay for it. Classrooms, healers, whatever they need. A school. You know how much we Malfoys love to throw our money around. The last is a joke, but not really. He looked into the cost of remodeling a wing of the manor already. Harry snorts, but he's no longer curled up and protecting his soft underbelly like a pill bug. I could teach them werewolf yoga. Harry's voice is contemplative, softly wondering. You could, Draco agrees, drawing Harry down into his arms, Harry's head on his chest, kissing his temple and stroking his hair. You'd be a great teacher. Night settles over them, curled close in each other's arms. Outside the warm, cozy cabin, snow falls silently and the tall fir trees stand guard around the small clearing. In the morning, 7.5 months after Harry activated a portkey to Germany, he writes a letter to Ron and Hermione. It consists of only one line. I'm coming home. Epilogue. The official name is Lycan Advocacy and Welfare Society. Miles better than Hermione's earlier naming efforts, but nobody calls it anything other than Mooney's Fairy Daycare. Headquartered on the first floor in the east wing of Malfoy Manor, it holds Harry's study, a classroom, a playroom, a quiet room for when things get a little too much, and the grand parlour turned exercise hall where Harry's little cubs can run around and wrestle and learn to regulate their wolfy instincts. Draco thought regular children were exhausting already, but little wolves have endless stores of energy and are quite proficient at scratching up antique vanishings. Luna painted the rooms in bright, cheerful colours, swirls of pink and teal and sunshine yellow, tall trees and strange animals on the walls that Draco suspects are only real in Luna's head. It's so unlike the rest of the manor with its dark furniture and faded tapestries. Draco still half expects the portraits of the Malfoy ancestors to walk out of their frames in protest. The house elves have taken to their new wolfy charges with admirable aplomb, though. Pansy came to the grand opening, even though she hates children, and thought this whole affair would end in tears, because Draco was an imbecile who had terrible judgment, and how dare he go and fall for Potter. Draco disagrees. He has excellent judgment. He picked her as his best friend, after all. Pansy is quite put out in general by the infestation of Gryffindors that Draco has dragged into her life like muck under her heel. But she bravely soldiers on. Pansy even made a donation on behalf of hopeless idiots everywhere. Draco was quite touched. It was all her fault anyway. If she hadn't made that wager about Draco applying to the DMLE in the first place, none of this would have happened. It was Pansy scoffing that they always would laugh in his face if he applied that made Draco do it. So everything is Pansy's fault, and Draco won't ever let her forget it. Draco's in the study, bent over Harry's large desk, covered in unrolled scrolls of landscape design plans and cost estimates and timetables. Harry has his glasses in one hand, rubbing the bridge of his nose with the other. Headache? Draco asks. Harry gives him a small smile. Nah, just tired. Remodeling has become necessary after it became clear the manor grounds didn't provide an adequate playground for a group of rambunctious mini werewolves. More often than not, their play had dissolved into a rousing game of catch the peacock. The peacocks weren't amused. Mother wasn't amused. Mother hasn't been amused about a lot of things at that point. She and Draco had a very polite row about it, but at the end of the day, it was Draco's decision. He'd inherited the estate, and his mother had relocated to her villa in Provence. Draco even opened some of the manor grounds to visitors, but he decidedly does not give tours. The door bangs open, and little feet clatter over the parquet flooring. Uncle Harry! Teddy cries, and launches himself against Harry's legs. Harry grins, perking up instantly, and ruffles the boy's pink hair. Hello, Teddy Bear. Are you here to visit Nicky? Nicky Sibilla, or Nicky for short, is Teddy's best friend, inseparable from the moment they met, when Nicky lost control of his eyes during an exercise, And Teddy spent the rest of the day with Yellow Eye too. They will enter Hogwarts together in 3 years, if everything goes according to plan.
Grandpa says I can stay if you say yes. Say yes!
Teddy looks up at Harry with large dark eyes that seem to twinkle with mischief. Of course you can stay. Nick is outside in the garden with Michelle and Sasha. Harry's such a pushover. Teddy whoops and launches himself out the open French doors, leading onto the vast manor gardens. The sound of little running feet fading fast. The kitchen table in the Granger Weasley cottage in Devon is littered with takeout containers. There's barely enough space in the small room to hold them all. Harry and Draco, Ron and Hermione, Luna, Ginny and Neville. Chairs scraping over the stone floor, everyone reaching for food at the same time and talking over each other. The windows are wide open to let the late summer breeze. The room is filled with the fragrant scent of coriander, garlic and ginger. Draco passes plate high with chicken biryani and steals the last samosa from Harry's plate when Harry's distracted by something Ron showing him in the prophet. Hermione, perched on Ron's lap, is listening to Ginny talk about her Quidditch training camp in Wales. Luna and Neville are discussing something botanical that Draco couldn't care less about. Suddenly, a wailing sound fills the room, coming from the little baking monitor on the kitchen counter that Hermione, ever resourceful, repurposed from extendable ears. Every head in the room swivels towards the noise. Harry puts a hand on Hermione's arm when she rises from Ron's lap. I can go.
Are you sure? Hermione asks.
Of course, Harry says. Rosie and I are buddies. Draco watches the pleased look pass between Ron and Hermione as Harry leaves to check on Rose. And Draco has to hide a pleased little smile of his own. This is where Harry belongs. In a cosy, sun-drenched kitchen surrounded by his friends and family. Not all alone in some lonely cabin in the snow. Hermione tugs on Draco's cardigan and beckons him to follow her down the hall.
I talked to Madame Maxime, Hermione says, tucking him into the study. You are right. Beauxbatons does have an anti-discrimination clause as part of their charter. Come and look at the draft I prepared for the Hogwarts Board of Governors. Harry's little ones will be safe, and all the other werewolves too. We'll make sure of it.
Started before Draco left to drag Harry home, is their combined mission now. Protect Harry's little wolves. Good luck to the poor sods who think they can stand in the way of Hermione Granger and Harry Potter when they have their minds set on something. Hermione's already drafted legislative appeals to be put before the Wizengamot. They'll continue with Hogwarts. Acceptance of werewolf students, adequate support, and a critical look at the curriculum. Headmistress McGonagall's on board. Harry made sure of that. Hogwarts will welcome werewolf students and care for their well-being, and every student will take that experience with them out into the world. When they return to the kitchen sometime later, Harry is still not back. Draco excuses himself to check that Harry didn't accidentally get turned around between the kitchen and Rose's room and end up in Siberia again. Draco climbs the stairs to the first floor, his gaze glancing over the photos on the gallery wall. Ginny's first goal for the Harpies, Harry half buried under a pile of giggling little wolves, Bill and Fleur with Victoire, Hermione's parents in front of the Sydney Opera House, Molly knitting Rose's first Weasley jumper, Hagrid and Fang in front of his hut. There's even a photo of Draco. But it's horrible and embarrassing, and Ron used a permanent sticking charm, the wanker. The hallway is quiet. Draco glances into Rose's room, careful to be quiet so as to not wake the sleeping toddler again. Draco leans against the doorframe and watches. Harry has Rose on his hip, her little arms around his neck and her head resting on his shoulder. Harry's whispering to her, swaying to a melody only they can hear. Harry looks up and their gazes meet. He gives Draco one of his bashful little smiles, hair falling into his eyes where Rose must have tugged some curls out of his bun. Harry's hair is even longer than Draco's now. His beard is neatly trimmed, but still dark and lush, and one of Draco's very favourite things. Draco's heart clenches. He still cannot quite believe he gets to have this. This man. This life. This happiness after all the things he's done. Draco's trying, every day, to be better, and Harry is too. He's trying so hard, even though Draco doesn't understand why Harry thinks he needs to. Harry has nothing to prove to anyone. Rose makes a little sleepy sound, and Harry puts her back into bed, tucking a blanket over her carefully. Hey, Harry whispers, joining Draco on the threshold. Hey, yourself. Spending time with your biggest fan? Harry grins, leaning closer.
I thought you were my biggest fan. Draco sniffs. As if, Potter. That's not what you said last night. Hush, the baby.
Harry laughs, low and fond. The sound travels down Draco's chest and settles warmly in his belly. He touches Harry's hand.
Come on, let's see if the ravenous horde left us some food.
In a minute, Harry says. He takes a step into Draco's space, one hand on Draco's hip, and leans in for a kiss, sweet and warm and familiar. Draco slides a hand into Harry's messy hair and holds on. Fixed in the ceiling over Rosa's bed, a wooden mobile sways in the gentle evening light, casting dancing shadows on the wall, crescent moons and full moons and small howling wolves. The end. You've been listening to Human, written by Akari and read by Reverie Pie. If you have enjoyed the story, please visit archiveofourown.org/works/3723047 to leave kudos and feedback for Akari. Many thanks to Akari for giving blanket permission for Podfix, and thank you for listening.